The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, I'm Jill Redding. I played Dolores on The Wire, and you're listening to the PVD cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 313. I hope all is well with you, and thank you very much for checking out this episode, the first episode of 2022. And, you know, since we're talking about the change of the calendar, I'm just going to go ahead and warn you, if you're listening, that this might be a little bit of a longer episode because I took some time off for the holidays. In fact, the last 2 weeks of December, I took a little hiatus from the PVD cast and spent some time with my mom and my stepdad in Rhode Island and some other family members. And I had a very good holiday season. I hope you did too. I had a really good Christmas. I had a pretty low-key New Year's Eve, but, you know, that still sometimes is enjoyable. It's less stressful if you're just hanging out, doing your own thing. And so, again, I hope that you had a great holiday season, and I'm ready to come back with a great episode, an episode that's going to recap all of the great films that I and my guest saw last year in 2021. And that guest is Mr. Paul Markoff, who actually is making his 11th appearance on the PVD cast. In fact, Paul and I used to meet twice a year, once usually in June or July, and once usually in December or January, to talk about the films that we saw and discuss them and whatnot. But given the last couple of years, we've just done one single episode because we haven't had the opportunity to see too many movies because of the pandemic. So we're going to cover all the films that we saw, and you'll be surprised that there's some that I saw that Paul didn't and vice versa. And there's actually some that neither one of us saw. For an example, the latest James Bond movie. But we're going to talk about them and hopefully not spoil anything for you. We try to run a discussion that's free of spoilers. And I'd like to just throw it out there as well. If you pay attention to the PVD cast social media, you'll see the list of films that Paul and I are going to discuss. So that'll be another way to try to maybe hopefully not spoil anything for folks that maybe haven't seen some of these movies and want to. And I'd like to just real quickly plug that Paul is a film critic and he is a co-host for the Filmbound podcast, which you can find at filmboundpod.com. So you should definitely check it out. As he mentions in the conversation that we have, they're starting to ramp up production again after a little lull due to, the holidays and pandemic and all that other stuff. But before I get to my conversation with Paul, I need to remind you about a great sponsor of the PVD cast, and that is World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have everything you need for your collection. They've got single issues, graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles, back issues. They got a great pull system. They got a friendly staff. They got it all. So if you're in the Central Ohio area, you owe it to yourself to go over to 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville and check out the store in person. But if you're listening outside of the Central Ohio area, you can still check out the store. Just go over to the website, wgcomics.com, or find them on Facebook at WG Comics and check out the store and see what is in store for you if you do any business with World's Greatest Comics. Did you like that pun? That was a pretty bad pun. I'm leaving it in, though. Anyways, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I sit down and talk movies with Paul Markoff. ladies and gentlemen, we're getting ready to discuss some movies. Joining me once again, Paul Markoff. Paul, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. We like to do this, twice a year, but unfortunately for the last couple of years, this year in 2020, it's been once a year. Off air, we talked a little bit about the situation we're in, and that has really hampered our movie watching, right?
Yeah. Okay. I haven't gone to as many movies as I normally would. And to be honest, the releases, they're not releasing them.
True.
They weren't, at least in the first half of 2021. There weren't as many big releases.
That's true. That's very true. We've managed to piece together a list of some of the things that we've seen. And so we're going to talk about them. We're going to try to review them without giving any spoilers away. We'll give you a warning if we are. But we're going to compare our notes and see what we enjoyed and maybe what we didn't enjoy from the offerings that came out this year. A lot of mine are streaming. I don't know what's your makeup? Is a lot of yours streaming as well?
Mine's about half and half.
Half and half.
I shouldn't say streaming, but I've been getting some screeners through the mail. So I've been watching some that way, and others I've snuck off to a few screenings. Even gone into the theater.
All right. Well, you know what? Before we get going, let's talk about it. Is Filmbound still doing well?
Slow but sure. We haven't released as many again due to the pandemic, but hopefully we'll have a couple new ones out here soon. But it's filmboundpod.com.
There you go. Check it out, folks. You know what? I'm going to let you go ahead and go first. So what's the first selection that you have on your list to discuss?
I'll pick the most recent movie that I've seen. I don't think it's playing here in town yet. It's called Come On, Come On. It's a independent film starring Joaquin Phoenix and Gabby Hoffman. And then I don't recall the newcomer. It's a young boy. Mm-hmm. And it's about a brother and sister who have kind of a fractured relationship. And the sister, played by Gabby Hoffman, is trying to help her ex-husband with some mental issues that he's going through. I believe he's bipolar. So she's trying to work with that. So the brother, played by Joaquin Phoenix, says, "I'll take your son off your hands while you're tending to your ex-husband and the father of your boy." And Joaquin Phoenix is actually a radio journalist for, it's probably something similar to NPR radio.
Okay. All right.
And he goes throughout the country and interviews youth about just what's going on in the world, what's going on in their lives, and he takes the child along with him for the ride.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like a road trip kind of movie mixed in with a little family drama?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
It's pretty unique, though. I mean, the setup sounds about as familiar as you can come up with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Older gentleman, middle-aged gentleman takes his nephew or a young kid. They bond, et cetera, et cetera. But I would say this, what differentiates this probably a little more so, is you get a little bit more into the backstory of the angst between what's going on in the child, what's going on with the child's mother, which is his sister. And then there's a dynamic between the brother and sister and kind of some family problems that they'd had in the past and how they butted head times before. And then also kind of the unique circumstances where he's a radio journalist. So to a certain extent, he already knows a little bit about kids because that's all he's doing day in and day out is interviewing youth, middle school, high school age kids. Granted, he's been dealt, his nephew's probably, I think he's 9 years old in the film.
Okay. So,
but he learns a lot more, of course, as he takes on his nephew, who's a little different in his own right.
Okay. So you would recommend this?
Yeah, it was right. Good.
What grade would you give it? An A through an F? What would you give
it? We don't do grades on filmbound.com, but I would give it a B.
You would give it a B?
Yeah, okay. It's good. It's good. It's solid.
I'm going to go with the last movie I also saw, and one that really piqued my interest, and that was The Eyes of Tammy Faye, which is a biopic about Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, Jessica Chastain and Andrew Garfield and Vincent D'Onofrio are the big stars of the production. It was interesting. I remember it as a kid, the hullabaloo about, Jim Baker being caught with the prostitutes and the rumors of homosexuality and the money, finances being somewhat sketchy. So it was enjoyable. I think Jessica Chastain did a fantastic job of channeling Tammy Faye Baker. I gave it a B+. I felt that Vincent D'Onofrio's performance was very distracting. playing Reverend Falwell. Basically, he just was the Kingpin. And I'm like, I just saw you on Hawkeye play the Kingpin. And this is the exact same character, but you're supposed to be the Reverend Falwell. So it was a little distracting. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Like I said, B+. I definitely think it's worth you checking it out.
That was one that piqued my interest, due in large part to the same reasons why you indicated that during the 80s, I saw him in the – I didn't follow the story as much. I was
right.
A kid.
Sure.
I probably got my news the way a lot of kids do these days, which is tuning into Saturday Night Live. So they had a sketch on every week about that group. But I did see – you'd see it in the headlines back
sure.
in the day. So,
yeah.
I mean, it kind of piqued my interest in, of course, with Garfield and I would say more so Chastain. That's a pretty good pedigree to start with to make a movie.
Yeah, and Andrew Garfield was pretty darn good, too. And the thing I didn't know until I started to watch it, because I watched it through a streaming service just a few days ago, there's also a documentary in which they credit that in the actual film, that there's a documentary from, I believe, 2007 of the same title. And that was kind of the basis for the script, which I thought that was kind of interesting, too. I don't know how many documentaries end up becoming a feature-length film.
They did it with the Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, so, there you go. Okay.
But so go. In general, no, you're probably right. Because typically I would say the documentaries, especially the documentaries, are probably a little more interesting than the fictional version. But certainly the fictional versions can bring, you know, something new, maybe hone in on a theme a little more so than the actual events.
Yeah. All right. Back to you.
I'll go with a big mainstream picture that just came out. I'm a big Spielberg fan. And I want to preface by saying I have not seen the original West Side Story, so I cannot draw any comparisons between Spielberg's version and the original, which won a slew of Academy Awards. I really liked Spielberg's version of West Side Story. It is what I think anyone would want to see in a big screen picture. It's the reason you go to the movies. The visuals, the sound, the choreography. Everything seems larger than life in this picture.
The music as well?
The music is terrific. From what I understand, you know, there might be some slight variations, but it pretty much sticks to Sondheim's original scores. And if anything has changed from what I understand, it's the choreography and maybe the renditions. But the music and the lyrics themselves, I think, more or less stay the same.
Okay. Would you give it an A?
I wouldn't give it an A, but I give it a B plus.
Okay.
I give it a B plus. I'm a little strict with my A's.
Okay.
We'll get to a couple later in the podcast, but
okay.
Yeah, I mean it's a real big screen experience.
Okay.
The
previews make it seem like that. I will say that is the one thing I took away from the previews is like this is a film you need to see in the theater.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. I saw it before the next wave of infections are going around here, but if you're not as fearful or you want to wait until it dies down, this is one that really does need to be seen on the big screen, I think, to truly appreciate it.
Okay. My next flick is one from Netflix, and it is another documentary. And it was one that I was very excited to see. And then by the end, I was sad and really angry. And that would be the Bob Ross documentary, Bob Ross, Happy Accidents, Betrayal, and Greed. I don't want to ruin it. Spoiler alert. I was saddened by the way in which his business partner screw him over. That made me mad because I'm a fan of Bob Ross.
I love Bob Ross, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, did you catch this or no?
I did not. This is one that it kind of got mixed reviews, but I'm just a big Bob Ross fan. I mean, growing up, I'd watch him all the time in the afternoons, late afternoons on PBS.
Yeah.
And, I have novelty T-shirts with Bob Ross on them. I love Bob Ross, so this was something that I was interested in.
My big gripe is that the chronology of some of the events is a little bit awkward at times, so that's why I gave it a B. But yeah, I mean, I likewise, as a kid, my great aunt would watch him, and what they say in the film is absolutely true. I would stop over to see my aunt, with my mom or whatnot, and she would be watching Bob Ross, and he made that connection with you. Like coming through that TV, I don't know. It was uncanny. As a kid, I was like, wow, this guy's not only is he talented, but he's talking to us. It just, he had that. He had that it factor. And the way he is treated by his business associates just is, it's aggravating. And I was,
I was very angry. I was cussing at the TV by the end of it.
Wow. Wow. So, well, I mean, and I would say this about a film. If it's, whether it's bad or whether it's good, if it's eliciting a reaction, it's serving a purpose.
Yeah.
It's achieving, you know, it's achieving what it sets out to do in many ways. The one knock I heard on the film is that you don't really, and you know, I'll let you answer this. I haven't seen it. Do you feel like you have a better understanding of who Bob Ross is at the end as opposed to before you saw the film?
I think there's a little bit in there. Yes. I think you get a little bit more, you know, the hairstyle I always heard was an accident. No, like his son talks about how that was on purpose. Bob Ross was a ladies' man.
Really?
Yes. He was a ladies' man. So that was something I didn't anticipate. I'm like, but yeah, the ladies love Bob Ross and Bob Ross loved the ladies.
All right. That would come as a bit of a surprise. I never saw Bob Ross as a player, but you know.
Yeah. So overall, it was very well done. Like I said, I just wish some of the events that they talk about, I like my documentaries to be linear, you know, like chronological. Sure. Maybe that's just me. But I dug it. So I suggest you should check it out.
I'm sure even if it's a lesser documentary, I'm sure I'd enjoy it just based on subject matter.
Right, right. All right, back to you.
I was going to try to, but I haven't seen any documentaries this year. I don't know if I should go big or if I should go smaller here. I'll go smaller with my next two. And this would be, if I was ranking films at this point, and again, I've watched a minimal amount due to the pandemic.
Sure, same here.
But one of my favorites last year, it's a smaller film. I would say it's the resurgence of Nicolas Cage, a movie called Pig.
Oh, okay. I've read a lot about this. I've heard a lot about this. Go ahead. How'd you like it?
I liked it a lot.
Okay.
It is one of the more unique. It's original. It's typically you can see where films are going. I mean, right. I've watched a ton of films for years now. I did not see the way that this picture was evolving. I mean, there's not like a shocking ending or a super big twist. This is more or less a drama. There's a little bit of edge to it. So Nicolas Cage plays I guess his job would be truffle hunter. He lives out in the woods in a small cabin, and he has a pig, which is his truffle pig. It's my understanding, I actually listened to a podcast probably about a month or two before I watched Pig, about truffle hunters that actually, I think most of them use dogs, but in this movie, he uses a pig to find out where the truffles are.
Okay.
So these truffles are, you know, extremely expensive. You sell them to restaurants. So someone comes out, purchases the truffles off him, and that's how he makes a living. And he's completely removed from society. He lives in the forest with this pig and, you know, sells truffles. I'm not giving any spoilers away here. Within the first scene or two of the film, someone busts into his cabin, burns down some other establishments around the area in the forest, steals his pig.
Uh-oh.
And then he's on a one-man mission to find his pig. And I've seen some comparisons to John Wick because, of course, I guess...
Yeah,
I never saw the original John Wick.
I've never seen any of them. I've never seen any of them.
I've only seen the second one. I really enjoyed it. but people drew some comparison between Pig, John Wick, and then First Cow, which is about a family that... It has some ties between a family and a cow, and he has a family today. But it is really a one-of-a-kind film, and Cage gives a performance that, to be honest, I didn't know that he still had it in him because he's been doing anything that comes across his table. I know he went bankrupt, so I don't know if he's just...
Well, and then he did that one, like, crazy film called Mandy, didn't he? Like, a couple of years ago, that was, like, completely bonkers... Like another one of those type of like John Wick like movies where he's out to avenge something.
He has done so many movies.
I know.
Was it Mom and Dad or something like that? It was kind of I guess it opened in Toronto at midnight. I watched that. It wasn't very good.
Okay.
it was where essentially the parents get revenge on the kids in the worst way.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
I'm not sure even if that's what it's called.
And doesn't he have another one coming out too?
I don't recall what the title is, but it's essentially Nicolas Cage playing himself.
Right,
but
yes.
They're making it out like it's Nicolas Cage as being John Malkovich.
Yes, pretty much, yes. That's the one that I was just thinking about because Neil Patrick Harris is in it. So is Pedro Pascal from The Mandalorian's in it. It looks weird as all get out.
So if Pig is any indication of what we're going to get out of his next film, you're in for another good one. Because this feels like the resurgence of Nicolas Cage. Unlike maybe even some of my favorite Cage roles, probably in the early to late 90s,
sure.
Where he kind of wears his emotions on his sleeve. Here, it's all internalized.
Okay.
Of course, he brings the baggage into this role of knowing how he was in those films. And you're just waiting for that moment where he's going to explode in this picture.
Okay.
Because he's angry. He's hell-bent on getting his pig back. And he's not in the most ideal of circumstances for most people.
Mm-hmm.
Where he more or less looks like a homeless individual. He does have a home, but it's a kind of a rundown cabin on the remote outskirts. But it's tremendously moving. It's surprising. It's one of the best movies I saw all year.
Okay. All right. Oh, man. Then let's go for me and try to find one of the best movies I've seen. Well, this year I would say there was two. So I'll go with keeping with the theme of documentaries. And I think this came out right at the beginning of the year. The documentary on Netflix called The Last Blockbuster. A documentary about the very last Blockbuster store in Bend, Oregon. I've heard of it. Yeah,
okay.
I loved it. It's a great piece of nostalgia. It's a cool tale of one woman, you know, against all odds, continuing to have this particular store. From what I've been told, Bend, Oregon is one of those few places in the United States where internet service may not be the best because it sits in kind of it sits between mountains. It sits in a valley. And so that might be one of the reasons why this Blockbuster has lived on forever. But it's great. I gave it an A. So overall, I really liked it. So I think that was one of the A's for this year.
Wow. I mean, it sounds interesting. Do they say at the end of the film that the Blockbuster still exists?
Yes. As of February, I believe it was still around. So
that's pretty surprising. Does Blockbuster still do business outside of this? I mean, they obviously do still do business outside of the one video store. They must have, I don't know. I mean,
well,
how do they work now?
They talk about that. And I'm trying to remember. Blockbuster was sold off to a streaming service. I don't remember which streaming service it was. If it was Netflix or Fandango, I can't remember. Well, no, I tell you, it's not Netflix, because in the movie they talk about how Blockbuster was approached to buy Netflix. And they were like, yeah, no, that's stupid. Which,
oops.
Get back in your time machine, Wayne Huizenga, and think about that. But they talk about, that they were absorbed by another company. I don't remember which company, streaming-wise. But they
still
running this one store. And towards the tail end of the movie, she has to re-up her license to continue to have the Blockbuster name. And it's up in the air whether they're going to get it or not. It's just really awesome. Like, they talk about how she, you know, goes to like Costco and buys all of the candies and everything to bring back to the store, you know, like that's one of her expenses. And all these people talk about, you know, the love of, you know, video stores, and they do the history of Blockbuster and everything. It's really well done. I really dug it.
And it's currently on Netflix?
Yeah, it was on Netflix. I believe it still is.
Okay, so I'll have to check that out. It sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Because like yourself, we're the Blockbuster generation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
they were born and died. The video store was born and died during more or less, you know, our teen into our probably 20s, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The other A that I'm going to go with is a big Blockbuster, The Suicide Squad. I really dug it. I don't know. Did you watch it?
You know, I started watching it. And this is no fault of The Suicide Squad, but I start these movies late and then I fall asleep a lot of the time. So I made it about a third of the way through. I don't want to give away too much, but Harley Quinn pulls a fast one on her love interest in the movie. And that's however far that's in.
Okay.
Movie.
Yeah.
I enjoyed what it was. I mean, to me, it's more or less a comedy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Daredevil type film.
It does. I thought it was very well done in terms of it's got the guy. John Cena was fantastic in it. I mean, you know, I could talk about John Cena. I've seen some other movies that came out previous years this year, and he really does well with comedy. I just got to be honest. But he was good. I thought Stallone as King Shark was fantastic casting. I thought it was silly, ridiculous, over the top, but darn entertaining. I gave it an A. Liked it a lot.
I'm going to have to watch the last two thirds then.
So, all right, over to you. Let's hear about some other films you've seen.
Okay, well, I'll break it out now since we're on the comic book.
Okay.
I went and saw Spider-Man No Way Home.
I have yet to see it as of this recording. I've heard nothing but great things. Everybody that I have heard from said, you got to see it. It's 10 out of 10, and that's all I've heard.
I liked it. Okay. I thought it was really good. I mentioned this on a social media string once, and people were a little taken back that I still think I enjoyed the first two movies a little better than the most recent one.
Okay.
I think for some of the, for lack of a better term, hardcore Marvel or hardcore Spider-Man fans, I think there's a lot to love about this picture.
Okay, good, good.
And this is where I think that group will probably be more energized by it than those that aren't as engaged into the Marvel universe. The first two films, I would say, are more character-centric.
Yeah.
I mean, there are things that obviously happen plot-wise in both the first two films, but it's more centered on the characters. Here, there's a lot of plot mechanisms. There's a lot involved in the universes.
Sure.
So that plays into it. I think that's what they love about it. And I still liked it. I liked it for all those reasons. But I just wish there was maybe a little bit more focus on the characters and the interaction between them. The three main ones, if you will.
Okay.
Spider-Man, Mary Jane, and Ned.
Okay.
But I'm sure you will not go away disappointed, John.
Oh, I'm very excited to see it. It's just a combination of the, you know, we're recording this before Christmas, so there's travel plans, Christmas to get done, spike in COVID numbers too. I'm not going to lie. That's kind of deterred me from wanting to go see it just right now, but I'm excited for it. I'm looking forward to it.
And it's another one of those like West Side Story.
Yeah.
You need to see you need to see this film on the big screen and seeing how well it did opening weekend,
yeah.
I'm sure it'll be around for quite some time.
I'm sure, yeah. It's not going anywhere. I'm going to stick with a Marvel movie as well. Black Widow, starring, of course, Scarlett Johansson, Florence Pugh, and David Harbour. I liked this. I gave it a B. I thought it was a very good Marvel movie. It was a very good superhero flick. I felt the ending was really ridiculously dumb. I did not like the ending. That's what kind of ruined it for me. I also didn't like David Harbour and Florence Pugh's terrible Russian accents. They were really bad. Like, it was distracting. Like, I'm like, you are, really? This is what you're going to do?
And they're not playing them for laughs. This is supposed to be more or less straight.
No, yeah. And okay. I'm like, look, you know, Scarlett Johansson does not have an accent. She's Russian. So right. Why can't just everybody not have the accent? Oh, it was really bad. I'm like, come on, guys. This is bad. And then just watching Hawkeye, you know, Florence Pugh comes into that TV show. And again, it's very noticeable. It's like, stop with the Russian accent, please. It's ridiculous. It's not becoming. But overall, like I said, I gave it a B. I liked it. I thought it was a pretty solid Marvel movie for what it is.
That's one that I missed. That was one that I did want to see.
Okay.
They were not releasing very many blockbusters. Fortunately, I think this one came out in July. And I just taken over a stint as a travel softball coach. I was only supposed to be the assistant, took on the head coaching duties. So you know, my summer was more or less devoted to travel softball. So, but that was one that I and my daughter that I was coaching wanted to see. We never got around to it. So that's on the movie bucket list for 2021. Okay. It will be seen eventually.
Well, if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and polish off. Do you have any Marvel movies? Because I'm going to go ahead and polish off mine.
No.
Okay, I think that's my last one. Okay, this Marvel movie surprised me because I had zero expectations. I was like, I don't know about this one because don't know much about the character. It just kind of looked totally different than any other Marvel film, and that was Shang-Chi. But it impressed me. It was actually really good. The plot was interesting. Great kung fu action. Fantastic acting. I gave it a B+. I, again, was blown away by how good it was because I really had it penciled in as being, well, I'll watch it because I watch all the Marvel movies. But I really liked it. It was very well done.
So where does he fall within the Marvel universe?
Well,
since I'm not going to see all the Marvel movies, but right. apparently I need to know everything going into every Marvel film.
Yes, so he falls into the realm of Doctor Strange.
Okay, so I think he does make an appearance. Then I know here.
Okay.
He makes an appearance in Spider-Man No Way Out.
Okay, gotcha. So he's in that part of the Marvel universe that he's with Doctor Strange okay. because Doctor Strange's sidekick, Wong, shows up in Shang-Chi to, you know, towards the end.
And okay, maybe, I don't it is, maybe it's Wong then. It's in No Way Home.
Is he a sturdier guy?
Yeah.
That's Wong. Yes. Okay, okay, yeah. Okay. Shang-Chi is not. Shang-Chi also has the 10 rings of his clan that have mystical okay. powers.
This would be one of my objections with the Marvel Universe, is that they're tying everything together and they think that they're buying your participation into every last thing Marvel. And I like the Marvel. In general, I like the Marvel movies, but I'm not seeing this as a homework assignment.
Okay.
So I'm not adding them all up. So
I understand. Not a problem.
I'll check in with you if I need any details okay. going into the next Marvel
film. That's fine. Hey, I had to do check in because in the comic, he doesn't have the 10 rings. The 10 rings belong to the Mandarin from Iron Man 3 because the Mandarin is his main villain. Shang-Chi's just a kung fu expert. That's it. And that was a comic that ran in the 70s. I don't think it came into the 80s. I think it was pretty much done by then. But so there's a little bit of creative licensing with the character, if you will, in the movie. Now, moving on to the worst Marvel movie they've ever made. That's right. I said it, folks. This one's the worst. Eternals was god-awful.
That I had no interest in seeing. And based on the reviews I saw afterwards, I think I made the right decision.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I gave it a D, and I'll tell you why I gave it a D and not an F here in a minute. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes, but the first 45 minutes is complete garbage. It's just a bunch of battles that they have that doesn't push forward a storyline. It doesn't really push forward any development of any of the characters. So I'm like, I'm so bored with this. Why?
So they're not even, the action isn't even entertaining.
The action's entertaining, but the point is, I'm like, okay, what are you building with this? It has a little bit of, you know, well, the deviants took over the ancient Babylonians, so we're here fighting them. Okay, but in the bigger scheme of things, where is this going? Kumail Nanjiani is the bright spot in the movie. His character, Kingu, I think is his name, or Kingo, he's the immortal that... He's funny because he basically, after the Eternals had done their thing, he goes to India and becomes the greatest Bollywood actor ever because he never dies. So it's his grandfather, which is him, and then his father, and then him. And he's got such an ego, and he's so, like, over battling for good and evil that he's very funny. He's very well done. Him and his sidekick, because he has a man valet, and I can't remember the man valet's name. But they're very funny and very, very well done. But the rest of the characters, one-dimensional, could care less. It was a stinker. I'll just say it that way.
Even Jolie doesn't bring anything.
No, Angelina Jolie, no. She brings nothing to that role.
That's sad because that was one of the reasons, I guess, I would want to see it. Because she, I think, was what we don't have much of anymore. We have a ton of great actors and great actresses. There's plenty of those available. What we don't have very much of anymore are movie stars.
Can you explain that? What do you mean?
Yeah, people that are larger than life.
Oh, okay.
People that, you know, not just, like, for instance, I think Joaquin Phoenix is probably a good example of someone that is and he was in Come On, tremendous actor. Maybe one of the best out there. But he's not a movie star.
Okay.
I mean, he's not larger than life.
Okay.
He's not, you know, if you put Joaquin Phoenix on a billboard or on a movie poster, you're not getting 50 million opening week.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean.
So,
okay.
Jolie was, I would say we have her, Hanks to a lesser extent these days.
Yeah.
I would say DiCaprio's one.
Sure. I was going to mention Leo. I was going to ask if he was on your list.
You know, I would say Will Smith's one.
Pitt?
Pitt. Yeah,
okay.
Pitt.
Brad Pitt. Okay.
It's just some people see, you know, they're... And sometimes the movie stars aren't as good of actors and actresses as some of the more prestigious ones that do the smaller films. But I think it's just great to sometimes see these people that are kind of larger than life being a film. And Jolie doesn't do too many.
So no,
when she does something like this, it's disappointing that she's not bringing anything to the film.
She's not. Like I said, I was very shocked at just how bored I was overall with the movie. And when would you ever think that, for right or wrong, that you would say a Marvel movie is boring? It's the one adjective you would probably not use.
No, I mean, I do think some of the Marvel films, particularly some of the earlier Avengers films, go on a little too long than they need to.
Sure.
They stretch out the action scenes to the nth degree where they lose their effect. But I still wouldn't probably call the Avengers movies boring, although I didn't recommend all the Avengers movies.
True. Okay, and that's true.
But no, you're right. You wouldn't think.
Yeah.
That's what their main purpose is, to entertain.
Right, and be exciting and be adventurous.
Sure.
And I was bored out of my mind.
Wow.
So
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Paul for just one moment to remind you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all of your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, collectibles, back issues on top of back issues, a friendly staff, a clean store. Just overall, it is a world-class establishment. You should check them out, especially if you're in the Columbus area. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or if you want, you can check them out online. Just go to their great website, wgcomics.com, or you can find them on Facebook. Just search for at WG Comics. So whether in person or over the internet, you have no excuse for not checking out a great sponsor, World's Greatest Comics.
All right, with that hot take, let's go over to you.
I'll pick one, a big mainstream blockbuster film. It was actually, I think, the first film I went back to see in the midst of the pandemic, and I'm a sucker for monster movies.
Oh,
I like
okay.
I like the monster movies.
Okay.
But they have to be good.
Yeah, sure.
And Godzilla vs. Kong was not particularly good.
That came out early, didn't it? Like early March? April came out early in the year, I think.
It came out before June. I don't recall exactly when. I think it came out before summer hit. You might be right. It might have been a spring break.
I think it was.
I took both my daughters to see it and a couple of their friends. I think they enjoyed it. I didn't get much out of it. I think part of the problem is, and one thing I liked about the previous King Kong movie, and I, for the life of me, you know, all these titles are
Kong Skull Island.
Yes. Kong Skull Island, which I did enjoy.
Right.
Is in Kong Skull Island, he had, for lack of a better term, he has more running room.
Mm-hmm.
There are more creatures. So I think the nature in which they're orchestrating the battle, the battles between Kong and either the humans or the other creatures that are on Kong Skull Island, is there's more room to operate, so they can build kind of the tension and suspense, and you can even kind of, I think, feel the nature of his size there.
Mm-hmm.
Here, it seems a little more slower, a little maybe clunkier, his battles with Godzilla, and maybe that's what these films have always been. Maybe I just remember them to be better than they actually were when I watched them when I was 12 or 13, but I was disappointed in Godzilla vs. Kong that I didn't think there was any necessary amount of tension or excitement drawn out in the big rock'em sock'em robot scenes of Godzilla and Kong battling.
They need to have a good Godzilla movie. They haven't had one in the modern era of film. Like the last one I did not like, with Vera Farmiga, the King of Monsters, the one with Godzilla, the one with Bryan Cranston was awful.
Godzilla barely showed up in that.
Yeah, right. That's the thing. Yeah. And so I feel like if you have that property, the pressure's on to do something good with that franchise.
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, I mean, there's always going to be some subtext with the, you know, it's environmentalism.
Or, oh, right.
You know, scientism.
Sure.
Run wild.
Yeah.
You know, science run wild or, you know, those in power taking advantage of things they shouldn't. You know, that's great. But first and foremost, these are monster movies.
Right.
You know, these figures are supposed to be larger than life, and I think there needs to be a certain amount of intensity when mm-hmm. they eventually clash. And I was just kind of disappointed in it.
Mm. Well, I'll go with another blockbuster from this year. G.I. Joe Snake Eyes, starring, of course, Henry Golding and Samara Weaving. Look, I have been very open and honest that I absolutely hate G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. Like, I have never watched it after the first time. It made me so upset as being a G.I. Joe fan and a kid that had oodles of G.I. Joe toys. It made me so mad. I never watched the second one, Retaliation. So I was curious to see what they would do with this. I gave it a C- because at least they stuck to the mythology a little bit more, which was my big gripe about Rise of Cobra. It wasn't a G.I. Joe movie. It was everything they did. I was like, no. Why are you ignoring 30 years of mythology that you've already built for this franchise? At least this one, they stuck to the mythology a little bit more. But the ending, again, is so terrible. The ending is, you know, I mean, everybody knows Storm Shadow's the bad guy, ninja, you know, in Cobra. So he plays an integral part in this movie. And it was like, oh, he's the good guy, good guy, good guy. Oh, crap, we have 10 minutes. We got to make him a bad guy. Quickly, let's do this. And it makes no sense. And Samara Weaving is absolutely dreadful in this role. She delivers her lines like Harrison Ford did on the Star Wars Holiday Special, which that means no emotion whatsoever, as if she was reading off a cue card. It was terrible.
The only G.I. Joe I saw, whatever the first in the live action was.
Yeah, that was the Rise of Cobra.
Rise of Cobra, yeah. I think I gave that one a C-. I didn't care for it either, and I checked out after that one.
Yeah.
I don't think I was nearly as big a fan as you were growing up with G.I. Joe, but I remember watching the animated version. I remember they had, it was a 2- or 3-part movie.
Oh, yeah, they had multiple. They had like 5-part movies in that. Yeah, Leather Dominator.
I really enjoyed that. I mean, I really enjoyed those. I thought those were a lot of fun.
You know, and here's the thing. There's an animated version that came out after the first two live-action movies. There's one called G.I. Joe Resolute, which I bought. And it's an animated, but it's really good. It's not as hokey as the 80s cartoon. It's a little more adult-oriented, you know, where there's people get shot and get hurt and, you know, there's conflict among the Joes and that. And it's really, really well done. And I would say if you haven't seen that and you're a G.I. Joe fan, you need to search it out.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. I still have a certain amount of nostalgia for the 80s Joe, sure. Though.
I'm going to go back to another movie that was streaming on Netflix, The Little Things, starring Denzel Washington, Jared Leto, and Rami Malek. It's about a sheriff played by Denzel, who has to go to the big city, Los Angeles, for another case, but then gets wrapped up in this serial killer that's running around the LA area. I gave it a C, only because, to be honest with you, Paul, you could have had any three actors play those roles.
That's disappointing.
It is.
Denzel. Now, it's funny when you mentioned there's a serial killer, and you mentioned the two other, with the Malik and Leto,
yeah,
being in the film. And I'm like, well, either, I don't know.
Leto was the serial killer.
Okay, but, so you're not giving anything away.
No, I'm not giving anything away.
But I mean, you could have said Malik there.
Yeah.
So when you say that, you know, they could have been replaced by, you know, any three other actors, I'm like, well, with Malik and Leto, you know, I wouldn't know who the serial killer was going to be out of those two. But the fact that you're saying that you could replace Denzel Washington in a picture.
Oh, yeah. He brought nothing to the role.
Then they're not. I'm gonna blame the director on that one then, because I'm pretty sure Denzel can bring whatever you need to a role.
Yeah.
So if his character's not delivering, that's probably on the director for not allowing Washington the liberties to make it what Washington wants that character.
Yeah, like I said, it was fine in terms of the plot, but like I said, there was nothing like over the top. So I was like, which is what you expect with Denzel's over the top performance, a solid performance.
Yeah, or something. I mean, he's a movie star.
Yeah, there you go.
is one of the most charismatic figures I think we have when they're on screen. He takes lesser films and make them worthwhile seeing. I mean, exactly. I'm just thinking about some generic thrillers throughout when Mark and I first started doing Now Playing. He did a movie called Out of Time.
Yeah, Safe House.
Which actually is not bad.
Safe House is a fantastic movie that I was like, I had no desire to see, but I was literally given a copy at a White Elephant party, and I'm like, okay, we'll watch this. It's really good.
The Siege, which I don't think is by any means a great or maybe even a really good film, but it's worth watching because Denzel is that good in the film that you just want to go see. I typically, when Denzel's in a movie, I want to go see it. So it's disappointing that you say that.
Yeah.
I'll cross that one off the list.
All right. How about another one on your list?
I'll stay with kind of it sounds like that was a thriller, so I'll stay with the thriller theme. Now, this one plays as a mystery, a thriller, a horror film called Last Night in Soho.
Oh, yeah. That got a lot of buzz. How was it?
It's okay. It's kind of uneven. I'd give it a C+.
Okay.
I was excited. I don't want to say 9 times out of 10, but probably 4 times out of 5, at least just thinking on it with the titles of the director, Edgar Wright.
Mm-hmm.
He normally can't go wrong. So I was really looking forward to it. The first third to half of the film is terrific. It's a mesmerizing experience. It's really atmospheric. It takes place in modern day. And then one of the characters, you're not sure if she's time traveling or if she's traveling in her mind, if it's a yeah. vision or yeah. or what happens. But for lack of a better term, she's transported back into the 60s. And I think it's in London. It's set in England. And she's kind of, even before she goes back there, she's mm-hmm. kind of enamored with that time period, due in large part to her mother, who had passed away. She'd actually killed herself. We find that out at the very beginning of the movie, and I think that's why she's enamored with the 60s, and she goes back to it in kind of these dreamlike sequences, which, again, are completely intoxicating. It's wonderful to see, you know, the cinematography, and you're so into the moment, mm-hmm. into these scenes that go back to the 60s. Then couple of twists come along the way. Those twists lead the film more down a spiral of a horror film.
Oh, okay.
And it kind of loses, I think, some of the fun and some of the depth.
How was Anna Taylor-Joy as the lead actress?
She's good. I have no complaints okay. about... And she's more of a figure than she is a character.
Okay.
Because she's the character or figure that Thomasin McKenzie, who is the lead in the film, she's someone that's... She's from the rural outskirts of England. She's going to the big city of London. I think it's... Oh, she's going to Soho. What am I talking about?
Soho, you know.
So she's a high school senior.
Okay.
Her grandmother doesn't think it's a good idea for her to go to the big city because of her mom's past, and yeah. she's from the rural outskirts, and she goes to the big city, and it's kind of her coming-of-age moment. Thomasin McKenzie's good. Anna Taylor-Joy in a lesser role. She's more of a figure. They're both fine.
Okay. I'm going to stick with Netflix films. Judas and the Black Messiah is my next one that I viewed. Of course, with Daniel, I believe it's Kaluuya, Lakeith Stanfield, and Jesse Plemons. It's the biopic of Black Panther Party leader Fred Hampton and his death. I gave it a B. I liked it. I always find the civil rights movement to be an interesting time in American history. I felt that Kalula, I think... I wish Daniel. We'll call him Daniel.
I think you got it right. I
think, okay, good. All right. He was fantastic as Fred Hampton overall. I really dug it. I feel like Jesse Plemons maybe didn't bring a lot to the role that he played, but I thought it was a pretty good film overall.
That was one that got a lot of buzz when it came out.
Yes.
That's one that's on the list again. There's so many good films that come out, so little time, but
yeah.
that was one I was interested in seeing.
I would check it out.
And it's got a good cast.
Yeah.
Nelson Stanfield and Plemons, although apparently Plemons doesn't deliver like he has in other films.
Yeah, he just kind of, he didn't bring a lot to the role. Again, very kind of one-dimensional. Like, you know, he was the antagonist, sort of. It wasn't bad, but I just expected a little more out of him. You know what? Well, I'll stick with the next one as well here real quick. Another Netflix film, Concrete Cowboy, starring Idris Elba, Caleb McLaughlin, and Liz Priestley. It's about a teenage boy being sent to live with his estranged father in Philadelphia. And his father, played by Elba, is involved in a black cowboy group. It was an interesting tale. I think relatable for many people. You know, not really knowing your parents, not really knowing your father or your mother. And it also made me really research this idea of the black cowboys and how, you know, that's like a big, I don't want to say subculture, but it is a big thing that I was totally unaware of.
Yeah. No, when you mentioned that, I'm like, this must be a group that I'm introduced to.
And apparently Philadelphia has one of the largest. And, you know, and they kind of show like how in a big city these gentlemen take care of their animals because, you know, it's Philadelphia. Where, you know,
yeah, I don't know where you would keep.
Where are you going to keep a horse? Yeah, you know, But it was very interesting. Like I said, Idris Elba, I think, is a great actor as well. So fantastic job from him. Liz Priestley did a very good job for her first big role as well. So I definitely recommend it. Like I said, overall B. To you now, sir?
I will go with Old. I am a big M. Night Shyamalan fan. He is hit or miss. I mean, he is the definition of hit or miss. And I would say, although it's not a big one, I would say Old's a hit. I enjoyed it. I think there are moments, if you know the general premise of the movie, which if you've seen the trailer, I don't think I'm giving anything away here, that a couple goes on a trip with their children on a beach to the, you know, the outskirts, and they find the tour guide leads them to a secluded portion that, you know, only a select few get to go to. They go out on this portion of the beach, and they rapidly start to age within a span of a day.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to give too much away, but the leaps in time are rather great in Old. And I think Shyamalan really does explore some interesting things about life, how we experience it, the joys and the pains, sometimes the horror, sometimes the laughter, and sometimes he mixes them all together at once. And I think he's doing that intentionally. Some people, you know, kind of knock the film for things that happen because, again, we're really experiencing a lifetime in a day.
Okay.
And the fact that that's happening, either you buy into it or you don't. Mm-hmm. If you don't buy into it, I'm not sure how you're going to experience Old and enjoy it.
Okay.
And there, of course, it's an M. Night Shyamalan film. So there are going to be some skips and twists and whatnot along the way. I'm not sure the conclusion in the end is as enriching as you might want it to be. But I also do think that, and I don't think this was intentional at all, but maybe I'm reading a little bit more into this now since we're in the midst of a pandemic. But I think there are some correlations you can make between our current times and what happens in the end of Old.
You have yet to mention an animated film. Have you not seen any?
I have. I've seen two of them.
Okay. Let's talk about them. Because you always have an animated film on your list. So
yeah, actually, there's two.
Okay.
They're both Disney movies. One came out in March. I saw that one when streaming. I think we had Disney Plus back then, or they sent me a link to it. Raya and the Last Dragon.
Yeah.
It was a good one. Extremely visually appealing. The storyline's pretty good.
Okay.
It's a well-done Disney picture. It a little veers off the course. I don't want to say veers off the course. That might not be the best way to put it, but it's not your traditional Disney princess picture.
Okay.
She's more of a heroine, Raya is. And I don't remember all the exact details regarding the plot, but it involves certain connections throughout her community that she kind of has to all bring together in order for something to happen.
Okay.
It's very well done, but it's not your traditional Disney, Disney film.
All right.
And the other one I saw, which I did see in theaters, I saw with my daughter. We both really enjoyed it. It's a musical called Encanto.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. Which that's kind of also like Ryo, because they have like the connection to like the environment, right? Because she has like, isn't Encanto where she has to learn the magic spells that is in her?
She actually doesn't have.
Or am I wrong?
The lead in Encanto doesn't have a special gift.
That's it. Okay.
There are other members of her family. They all have the gifts, and she's the one that doesn't have the gift. So each of the other family members has something special that they can do, and they incorporate that into the picture. And she's kind of essentially trying to find her way in life because she's quote unquote not the special one.
And okay.
It's good. I mean, it's the colors in it pop. You know, the music's good. And of course it ties everything in the end together and, you know, has a pretty emotional punch in the end.
Okay.
So, I mean, both of those Disney films, you really can't go wrong with Disney animated pictures. Some are better than others. I would say this is more towards top tier Disney, both Raya and the Last Dragon and Encanto, with a slight edge probably to Encanto.
Okay. I'm going to go with a movie that I was very interested in seeing. I think it got pushed back a couple of times, only just because of who was in the movie. I'm going to go with Nobody, starring Bob Odenkirk, RZA, and Christopher Lloyd.
You're covering all the movies I wanted to see. That was one I wanted to see.
I'll tell you what. All right. I give it a D, but it's really? A fun movie. Because it's predictable. You know from the outset.
You said it's a fun movie and you're giving it a D?
I'm giving it a D because if you're going in for it for something original, it's nothing original.
It doesn't have to be original. If you're saying it's fun, okay. That's good enough for me.
All right. It's fun. It's one man pushed to the breaking point and then you find out, you know, he's got a secret past. Christopher Lloyd shooting Russian mobsters with a shotgun is hilarious because, let's be honest, he's really, really old.
Yeah,
he's probably should not be shooting a shotgun if this was real life. It was stupid. It was silly. It was ridiculous. So if you want that type of movie, I give it a B. If you're looking for something else, I give it a D. How about that? I'll fix my grade for you, Paul.
Good, good. Because when you say it's fun, that's a recommendation.
Okay.
If you're saying you had fun at the movie.
I did.
I need to see it. I mean, that had kind of the bare knuckles, straightforward thriller that sometimes that's what you're looking for.
And you know
what? It doesn't have to be overly complicated.
I wanted to see it because I'm like, Bob Odenkirk. Doing Charles Bronson. That's what I said to myself. I'm like, I got to see that. Well, I got to see that.
Isn't kind of the appeal. Like, Bronson was always kind of, if I can say this, kind of a hard ass on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that Odenkirk is not.
No.
He's kind of a plain guy. And that's, to me, kind of the appeal of the film.
Yeah.
Is that you can, you know, you don't have to be John Wick or Charles Bronson, you know, or the Terminator or whatever if you want to take out somebody. You know, if you have the heart and, you know, if there's a will, there's a way. Isn't that kind of the spirit of the film?
Yeah. I mean,
or is it so ridiculous that Bob Odenkirk's doing the kind of stuff that he does?
I mean, well, because it's revealed that he has a past and he has training.
Okay.
So he's not just your average man. Okay. You know, he has a past that he left behind. Kind of like, you know, in A History of Violence, you know, okay. Viggo Mortensen's left that behind.
And yeah, then but I mean, Viggo, you kind of look at and you're like, hey, I can see that. You look at Bob Odenkirk.
Right,
like,
yeah. This is the guy from Mr. Show. You know? So I have one left. I'll let you go ahead and take care of a couple on your list because my last one is a humdinger, if you will.
Okay. So I'll go into A Quiet Place Part 2. I'll mention that really quick. If you like the original A Quiet Place, I don't know why you wouldn't like A Quiet Place Part 2. It does have an interesting start to the film. For a minute, I'm like, is this A Quiet Place Part 2? It actually has a prologue.
Oh, really?
So we get to see what happened before A Quiet Place Part 1, and then we go into the events of A Quiet Place Part 2. In many ways, and maybe this is the way the action scenes were orchestrated and how well I thought they were done is it kind of had a Jurassic Park, Jurassic World type feel, the better versions of those films. I think it works as kind of this monster movie with
because it builds the tension.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it has, of course, the wrinkle that, you know, you need to be quiet.
Right.
So
right.
I think if you like the original A Quiet Place, you're going to like A Quiet Place Part 2. My last two films, and maybe I'll just get one in, and then you can...
Okay, you do your first, and then I'll do my last.
I'll do one, you can do one, and then I'll get out with one more. There's a film called, and this is completely out there. I've never seen anything like it before. I'm probably not going to see anything like it again. It's called Teton.
Okay. I have never heard of this film, Paul. You got me on this one.
So, it's an art house film.
Okay.
I actually saw it at Marcus Theaters. I was the only one in the theater at I don't know if it's 10 o'clock or 9:45 show. It was a late show at Marcus Theaters, and I was the only one in the theater. And like I said, it's an art house film. It goes into a girl who gets in a car accident with her father at a young age. They kind of have somewhat of a fractured relationship. And in the midst of that car accident, she has this is in the first scene of the film. She gets in a car accident. She has surgery, and then she has, for lack of a better term, a drive towards titanium, steel, automobiles, and it takes it every which way and sideways.
What country did this come from?
It is a foreign language film. I'm glad you brought that up. I am not sure. It feels like it would be a French film. So
okay.
I think it is. I'm going to say French. It's something European. but I think it's a French film. This is a completely, if you're just looking for something you've never seen before, and this is out there. I mean, in every stretch of the imagination, it's graphic, it's intense, it's odd. Okay. And in some essence, it's even a bit touching in the end. I don't want to give too much away, but she builds a father-son relationship with a firefighter that she eventually meets in the picture. And there's a unique dynamic between those two that is what I get at when I say that it kind of has some touching moments. But if you're adventurous, Titan. It's spelled T-I-T-A-N-E.
I'm looking this one up when I go home. I hope it's streaming somewhere.
Yeah, I'm B minus or B on it. I was probably more C plus B minus, and I went with a B minus originally on our podcast because it's an experience like none other.
It's a film you will not forget.
You will never forget Titan if you watch it.
Well, my last film on my list is another one that you will not forget if you see it. It's another Netflix original. It is The Army of the Dead, starring Dave Bautista, Theo Rossi, Tig Notaro, where a group of mercenaries are out to score a heist, but they have to go through zombie-infested Las Vegas. Oh, man. This movie... it's not very good. But I'll tell you what, I give it a D because the backstory to the movie is fantastic. This is a Zack Snyder film that floated around Hollywood for 14 years. It saw various stages of production. It finally got greenlit in 2020. They shot it around the pandemic. The original character that was the helicopter pilot was played by comedian Chris D'Elia. After shooting Wrapped, all of the sexual assault allegations against Chris D'Elia came out. So they went back, recast. Tig Notaro now takes that role. They reshot all of the helicopter scenes. So to me, the movie is trash, but the backstory is 10 times better than the movie.
So do you think this got greenlit because of, and I don't remember when the extended version of Justice League came
out. I don't know when that came out either. That came out early in the year. I want to say January or so.
Okay, so I'm wondering if some of the buzz maybe got out that Snyder's Justice League was so much better than the actual Justice League that's why he had the opportunity to do this maybe?
Well, I don't know because this was made after Justice League.
Okay.
So, because this was made in 2020. When was Justice League Dark released? Was that January of 2021 or I don't remember.
Everything blurs together these days, especially in modern times.
Yeah, it was not very good. I mean, Dave Bautista, I think, has had some very good roles. This was not one of them. Theo Rossi, who I really enjoyed from Netflix, Luke Cage, was pretty much just playing the same character as on that show. I can't give this. I mean, look it up on Wikipedia, read about it. It's fascinating, but that's all I can recommend for the movie. So, all right, back to you, Paul, you said you have one more.
Yeah. I kept my, I hate to say favorite, but it's definitely the best movie I saw last year. I would say it was probably my favorite too, although it's extremely depressing. I would say it's one of the most depressing and yet hopeful films that I've seen in quite some time. I don't want to give too much away, but it's a story about two couples that meet several years after a tragedy that involved both of their children. And they meet, and I think it's in the basement of a church. They meet in a meeting room at a church. And it's more or less, it kind of plays like a stage version because it's more or less set in this one room.
Okay.
With the parents' interaction and going over some of the things that were involved in this tragedy and, you know, why it happened and them trying to come to some sort of reconciliation regarding it. And I was completely overcome with emotion at several times in the film, but very much so in the end. And after thinking about it more so, there's some introductory scenes with a couple of members of the church kind of getting the meeting room ready.
Mm-hmm.
And they meet with the mediator, which I believe is a lawyer that's brought these two couples together. And they're really particular about everything that's happening in the setup. And you're like, You're watching the beginning. You're like, well, you know, what's going on? What's the mm-hmm. big deal? And of course, when you see what the parents are there to meet about, you understand more. And then there's something even in the end, which originally they told them not to have involved, or they didn't want going on at the same time the group was meeting, that you hear in the end that really strikes a chord and ends on just the right note.
So what's the name of the film?
Did I not tell you? I don't think I did. It's called Mass.
Okay.
And these are all character actors. Mm-hmm. There's a couple that's played by Reed Birney and Ann Dowd, who are on more or less one side of the tragedy. And then there's Jason Isaacs and Martha Plimpton that are a married couple on the other side of the
tragedy. I've recognized those two names.
Yeah. Especially okay. Plimpton was from, I still think of her from The Goonies.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But, I mean, all four of these performances are terrific, and I wouldn't be surprised if at least you see one or two maybe up for an Academy Award. I haven't seen the push for Mass, but it's hard to imagine someone watching a film like Mass and not really being affected by
it. Right, right, gotcha.
And kind of a roundabout general way, without giving away what the film is actually about, it made me think in kind of general overview how, like the two people here, they get together after years after a tragedy, that's kind of, we need more of that type of discussion in our lives as a society instead of the, tweet back and forth or, message back and forth.
Right.
One thing leads to another that I think, in the overall scheme of things, that's sort of what Mass is getting at.
Cool. Any other quick movies that you want to run down that you saw that you liked one way or the other, or any that you're looking forward to, any that you missed that we didn't talk about? I miss Bond. I want to see the new James Bond. I didn't get to see it.
I'm not a big Bond fan. They all feel the same.
But I know.
I've heard enough about the new Bond to know it's not like the normal Bond movies, since this is Craig's last stand as Bond,
mm-hmm.
that we'll get a new Bond. The only other two films on my list, one I didn't see all of, I saw 2/3 and I was not entertained. My kids weren't even particularly entertained with it.
Was
Cruella.
Oh.
Which was the prequel to
101 Dalmatians.
101 Dalmatians. I think they're going to come out with another one. I will not be watching it. I don't think my kids will be into it either. And then a marginal recommendation for King Richard.
Oh, the Will Smith, Williams sisters biopic, right?
Yes, okay. Which is just a tremendous story.
Right.
I mean, just seeing the story on screen gave it a recommendation for me. Smith's fine. I think he maybe is a little bit too much of a caricature. Although I know from what memory serves me straight from the Williams sister's father that he was kind of a character in his own right.
Yeah, yeah.
But Smith every now and again kind of overshadows the story. I think, and I shouldn't be grading the story that I wanted to see,
mm-hmm.
Because this one's more focused on him and his impact on the kids,
as opposed
to the kids themselves. But it's just a tremendous story. It's worth seeing.
Cool. All right. With that, let's remind folks one more time where they can catch Film Bound.
It's at filmboundpod.com. I co-host and co-produce with Mark Pfeiffer.
There you go. Any other social medias or anything else you want to plug for the podcast?
I'm on Twitter at @Paul_Markoff.
Okay. There you go. And Film Bound's on there, right?
Film Bound's on there. Yeah.
There you go.
I'll probably be a better follow than me. You might not like some of my retweets.
Well, if you're going to tweet a lot about softball and coaching it, I mean, there you go.
Or sports. Or Reds or Bengals.
There you go. All right. Paul, thanks again for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for having me.
All right. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Paul Markoff and I talking about the movies that we watched from this past year. And I hope you enjoyed the episode. And I hope that Paul and I did not spoil any of these movies for you. That's why I throw it out there on social media, the ones that we're covering, so that you're aware. But nonetheless, if you feel like maybe we have spoiled something for you, let me know. And there's a couple different ways you can do that. You can always shoot me an email if you like. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is my email address. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @pvdmvp. And you can even leave me a message over on the Facebook and Instagram feeds. Just look for
PVD Cast. And it's a new year, and maybe you want to recommend the PVD Cast to some of your family and friends. Well, there's a bunch of different places where they can hear the PVD Cast. Obviously, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and that's a great way to get every episode, but it's also available through all of those major podcasting outlets. Just go to the search engine in that outlet, type in PVD Cast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should be able to find it. And I need your help. If you check out any episode of the PVD Cast, please rate and review. You don't know how much that helps me out if you give it a very good rating, whether it's 5 stars or it's 2.5 lightning bolts or whatever the scale is. Just give it the best and the most honest review that you think, because it helps me out so much. If you review, you simply can just write down awesome. That's it. You don't have to write a giant novel or anything. But again, rating, reviewing helps me out so much in the algorithm. And of course, subscribing means you never miss an episode of this great podcast. I'd also like to remind you that I do a Facebook broadcast every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time through the Facebook page of the PVD Cast. And simply, it's another avenue to listen to the episode and interact with me, because I do keep monitoring all of the different comments that people like to drop in the discussion, so to speak. So feel free to check it out if you like, one Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And again, that's through the Facebook page of the PVD Cast. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to head on out of here. One more time, I'd like to thank you very much for checking out this episode. And with that, I will chat at each and every one of you later. And as always, stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Following has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2022.